The following is a presentation of Geekster Media.
Remember that show back then?
Remember that show?
Turned on the TV, time was always flying. Why did they have to end? So many shows you forgot. TV dudes you'll ever listen to, as long as we keep on talking sitcoms and cartoons from back in the day. Okay, we confess we were obsessed, but we got a podcast to help you remember that show.
Hey there, TV lovers, and welcome to Camp One Another Season, the official summer camp of Remember That Show, the podcast where we revisit the obscure or forgotten TV shows of the 80s and 90s. We have so many fun activities planned for episode 12, like creating our favorite network logos out of popsicle sticks, mixing up a batch of biodegradable Nickelodeon slime from all natural materials, and using our tracking skills to find Mark Summers' house. I'm Senior Camp Counselor Adam Pope.
And I'm Camp Director William Bruce West, reminding you that all campers who signed up for the Rugrats Lookalike Contest need to meet in the dining hall at 2 p.m. And please, no diapers.
Well, it's time to experience the great outdoors through the magic of television, but before we examine the bunks and punks of days gone by, we have to revisit our own TV-obsessed childhoods in a segment we call Theme Song. Sha-la-la-la. So, Will, it feels like there have been so many stories told in TV and movies about summer camp shenanigans, but do you have a favorite set of campers from the 80s or 90s who you enjoyed watching?
Not really, because I don't like the outdoors. Like, the idea of going to camp is like sending me to the gulag. Like, I just don't want that. So, to me, it was probably Camp Candy, because it was a cartoon. It was Saturday morning. It was John Candy. It was NBC. Like, it checked all the boxes. I liked watching it. Never wanted that experience. Even, like, sitcoms, when they do that episode of they go camping and it's on the soundstage. Like, when it was Second Chance or Boys Will Be Boys, like we watched, and there was the shooting. Or when Three's Company did it. Like, I don't like camping at all. So Camp Candy's my default.
So it was Camp Candy, not those wonderful monsters from Camp Minimon?
Yeah, no, not them.
So I will say, strangely, I have always been fascinated by a summer camp movie that was on the Disney Channel back in the day. But this is like an old-timey movie. I'm going to show Will the tape here. It was called Looking for Miracles. Nobody has ever heard of this thing, but it's set in the 30s. There's this older brother who wants to go to college, but he has to earn some money. So he becomes a camp counselor and he has to take his younger brother with him. But for really no reason, everybody at the camp is mean to these brothers. So they're like bonding because the world is terrible around them. It's very sappy, but I think it's my brother is 17 years older than me. So I think I saw a little bit of us in this movie, but I specifically remember there is a scene where the younger brother, his name is Sullivan, he runs away and the older brother keeps, you know, shouting for him, Sullivan, Sullivan, because I'd never heard that name before. So it always just stood out to me. But then there's this really like heartbreaking scene where the kid's like crying and his brother's talking to him and the little kid's talking about how he asked this kid at the camp to be his friend and the kid said no. And then the brother asks why and he says, because he says he hates me. And it broke my heart as a kid. And it was a little too close to home for my own experiences at the time. So it's so crazy. This movie now, I had to get it on VHS because it's only available on something called Gazebo TV. And I think it's owned by the writer director because it's all in his name. On a lighter note, I will just say Sleepaway Camp 2, Unhappy Campers has a great just collection of just ridiculous campers. It's a very fun movie. I went to a midnight screening of that movie like 15 years ago. I won a replica Camp Rolling Hills t-shirt in a contest. I will not admit to the rules of the contest what I had to do to win, but I did win. But it's just, it's crazy. It's fun. And I don't own a copy of that on VHS because that movie's crazy expensive. So...
All right. Well, Adam, we may have been living vicariously through the television campers and their counselors most of the time, but did you ever find yourself transported to a cabin in the woods or some other type of overnight wilderness experience as a kid?
Well, I will tell you, I can't wait to hear if there was ever a situation where you were dragged kicking and screaming. But for me, in my elementary school, the sixth graders always got to go on an overnight camping trip. And so I looked forward to it for years, thinking it would be like Salute Your Shorts, you know, at least for one night. I'd get to have that experience because I'd done like a little bit of camping with my family, but not much. But the summer after fifth grade, I moved to New Jersey to live with my mom's family for like 6 months. I went to school there, and I'm sure I'll talk more about that some other time. But when I got back to California, the trip had already happened. And then the other kid said, "Oh man, we thought you moved. We were happy." And I was like, "Oh, that is rough. Was I that terrible? Come on.
Oh my gosh."
Yeah. So the concept ended up being kind of tainted for me, but I was in Boy Scouts in the 90s. So eventually I did go to a Boy Scout camp just up in the mountains. We were there for a week and there was a counselor who was assigned to our troop. And his last name was Snells, S-N-E-L-L-S. So, of course, we called him Snails. And he was our Ugg. And, you know, we ate gross food in the mess hall. And we did lanyard and bead crafts. And we sang songs. We did a talent show with skits, you know. Even did skeet shooting. And most memorable of all for me, though, in terms of roughing it, was there were bathroom stalls that had no doors. And I was traumatized by this lack of privacy. I don't think I went to the bathroom that whole week because I'm just like, oh. And I will tell you, but my family is aware of this. My bathroom is my sanctuary to the point where, like, in my bathroom now, I have a full entertainment system set up. There's a TV. We got VCRs. We got everything going on in there. And everybody knows, like, if we move to a house, we have to have at least three bathrooms because one is mine. And then we'll have a guest one and we have the master, but I always get a bathroom.
Oh, wow. I can't even fathom that. I think we have like two bathrooms. One is kind of mine, but I don't have it. Yeah, no, it's also the guest one and the first floor one. So I can't have like an entertainment system, but that's amazing. We're going to need like a bathroom tour on your YouTube channel.
Yes. But Will, so anytime in the outdoors in your neck of the woods, were there woods?
Oh, yeah. All right. We're about to have a very special episode of Remember That Show because growing up, I grew up in a Lutheran private school. So I was there from kindergarten through sixth grade. Fifth and sixth grade, for 1 week in like the spring every year, we had what was called outdoor education. And so we went camping with like surrounding Lutheran schools. At that point, there were like three. It was like Concordia and Ascension, and like enough to make it worthwhile to like rent this campground or whatever. So like we were in cabins and it was like your camp experience. We had like arts and crafts and activities and things like that. Fifth grade was pretty cool. Sixth grade, I had an experience with one of the adult chaperones. And it's not going to require a damage control, but he was off his meds and I was traumatized. His daughter was traumatized because she was embarrassed. Her dad like kirked out. And it was like, I remember like they had to call my mom and like I lasted out the rest of the week. But I remember like I milked the hell out of it when I got home. That's how I got like Reign of the Superman. It always goes back to geekery. Like my mom felt so bad for like what I'd gone through. I got like what all like 23 parts of it or whatever. But like, so that put a bad taste in my mouth. And then between like sixth and seventh grade, there was this like Lutheran camp kind of close by called Raven Rock. And like a lot of the kids from my school and from like the other schools, they would go there. So it's like 2 weeks in the summer. It was kind of like my first time away from home, really. Like the parents came up that like 1 weekend. It's like, oh, parents' weekend. But it's dumb because it's a 2 week thing. And that one was pretty like successful. I've actually been cleaning out my aunt's apartment lately and I found the Raven Rock like camp picture like a month ago, you know, and I had completely forgotten about that experience. So, like, that was nice, but ultimately, I don't want camping. I don't want that experience. It does nothing for me. My wife is from Denver and she talks about how she and her family used to go camping and she wants to do it with the girls. And I'm just like, well, y'all have fun. I'll watch the house. So.
I mean, yeah, we're indoor TV kids. That's 100% my wife. She's from Montana. That's where we live now. Her happy place is a lake, and she wants to go there every summer. And it's just like, I'm doing this because I love you so much. But you know, this would never be my choice.
Oh, yeah. My wife has started talking about retiring to New Mexico. And I'm like, what the hell is in New Mexico? Like, we might not be together then. Like, that is not where I plan to die. Like, it just. Anyway.
Well, you know, there must have been somebody out there who loved the great outdoors, and it wasn't just John Candy and Dan Aykroyd. You know, they seem to always be popping up in the stories what was going on. So we have to figure out what it was in the world of television production, in the zeitgeist, that led people to say, hey, let's give a strange comedy sitcom about kids at camp the green light. During its first 10 years of existence, from 1979 to 1989, Nickelodeon aired a strange mix of educational shows. There was Mr. Wizard's World and National Geographic Explorer and youth news-based talk shows. They're called like Live Wire and Don't Just Sit There, or kid-based game shows, of course, you know, Double Dare and Finders Keepers. That was really what everybody was tuning in for. But they had random old cartoons that they would run then, like the Star Trek animated series and Canadian TV programs that they just pulled in, like You Can't Do That on Television or Today's Special, which I think we will talk about at some point in the future. But by the 90s, the network was ready to start creating original programming that could compete with the Disney Afternoon syndicated animation block. That was a big deal after school. Kids were running home to watch Darkwing Duck and DuckTales and everything else. And so, in addition to their new lineup of Nicktoons, the network also developed live-action shows with a more traditional narrative style. So these early 90s offerings included things like Hey Dude, Clarissa Explains It All, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, and the program we're here to discuss today, Salute Your Shorts. But before we get into that, I have to ask, Will, you have said many times on the show you didn't grow up with cable. So did Nickelodeon mean anything to you as a kid?
It was everything to me as a kid because it was aspirational. Like, it was the brass ring. Like, any chance I got to convince my mom, like, we need cable, it was always like, they have the Learning Channel. Little did we know eventually it would be nothing but 90 Day Fiancé. But it was always like, they have the Learning Channel and they have Nickelodeon. And I would like gravitate to any layman's Nickelodeon access I could get. I mean, I bought like the Hey Dude novelization from Crown Books. I was gobbling up the Nickelodeon Happy Meals with like all the crazy like toys and stuff, like the microphone with the spring in it. Like, I jumped at any Nickelodeon thing I could get because to me, I'm sure at one time people would think, like, oh, that family has a color TV, they're rich. In my mind, it was like, if you had cable, you were rich, you know? So it was like, some people want that personal bathroom, some people want that fancy car. I just wanted cable. There was one point in time when, like, we flirted with moving to Alabama because there was like this dream house my mom always wanted down the street from like where they owned a house, and it went on the market. And we went to look at it, and it was more awesome than our house up here. And my only caveat, because most people were like, ah, oh, you're in the sixth grade, whatever, aren't you gonna miss your friends? I was like, screw all that. Can we have cable? I was like, if we can have cable, pack up the truck, you know? And then, as fate would have it, I got stung by a bee in the ankle for the first time in my life at the swimming pool at this house. And then I was like, nah, screw that house. I don't want anything to do with it. But like, so Nickelodeon was everything to me, to the point that like, even when I finally did regularly get cable, and that's fairly, we're talking like 2010, I was watching Nickelodeon. I was really into iCarly. Like, to say that would probably put me on a list, but like, I loved that show. I was really into the Dan Schneider stuff, which, well, read the news. So anyway, when I was a kid, that was all I ever wanted, was just to be able to watch Nickelodeon. That's why, like, I loved syndicated Double Dare. It was like I was getting a taste, but not the whole thing.
Well, I'm curious, did Nickelodeon have preview weeks ever? Like where they would give you like Nickelodeon and you'd be able to see the shows, or no?
Well, you only really get preview weeks if you have cable. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, if you have a package that doesn't include a channel, then during the preview weeks, you'd get that channel. We had nothing. I was a rabbit ears kid until like a decade ago. Like, when they switched over to that digital signal and like old antennas didn't work anymore, that was like Armageddon to me. I have so many like converters and digital signal boxes in this basement that I don't even need, because you never know, if the grid goes down, this, we might have to. So yeah, that's where I'm coming from. What was Nickelodeon to you?
Oh, I mean, Nickelodeon, it's so interesting because, yeah, in my neck of the woods, like, cable, as far as I knew, you just had cable. Like, everybody had it. But I didn't have premium cable. So to me, Disney Channel, that was the aspirational one.
Like that Looking for Miracles movie, I didn't see that on my own. That was like during a preview week, or I caught it at somebody's house where I was mooching the Disney Channel from them. You know, like, we definitely never had it, but I always wanted it. I was just like, I'm missing so much. The new Mickey Mouse Club. Oh no, I'm never going to see it except on preview weeks.
You know, we never had HBO, we never had Showtime or Cinemax. That was probably for the best. But you know what I'm saying? But we had USA and we had Nickelodeon and we had all that stuff. But Nickelodeon was my literal first experience with what cable was, where I realized there was something I would want to see at all hours of the day, and it was just made for me, like programmed just for me. So I recorded blocks of Nickelodeon programming constantly on our VCR from like 1986, probably till about 1990. And sadly, I only have one of those tapes now. It's from a Christmas, you know, like December 1986. But like, stuff like, you know, in the morning, I could be watching cartoons like David the Gnome and The Little Prince. And my wife loves The Adventures of the Little Koala, which they didn't have cable either. So her aunt would record blocks of Nickelodeon and Disney Channel and send it to them, you know. But then like in the afternoons, you'd get Wild and Crazy Kids, Double Dare, Doug, you know, all the other Nicktoons. But I was also... then, even before Nickelodeon, I think, like, that it really sunk in, I was watching Nick at Night in the evenings, in before SNICK, you know, became a thing. So I'm getting exposed to Mr. Ed and Dobie Gillis and the Patty Duke Show and all this stuff. So SNICK eventually became a big deal for me. So Clarissa and Alex Mack, I love those shows. But the strange thing is, this is like a touchstone of so many kids our age, but Are You Afraid of the Dark? I watched a few episodes, but that wasn't like my favorite. My favorite, which I hope we maybe can cover someday, was the short-lived show Roundhouse, which fascinated me. It was this weird, like, musical theater live comedy show. Like, it was so bizarre. But my era of Nickelodeon ended, like, when Hey Arnold and My Brother and Me became, like, the normal programming. I'm like, there's a kid named Goo on this show? I think I'm out now. I'm too old for this. And then I just graduated to MTV. So Viacom, the parent company of all these cable networks, they just owned my TV time, like, for most of my childhood. It was crazy.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. And I did a few of Are You Afraid of the Dark? That was kind of, like, the thing with me where... and we'll probably get into this, but even though it was the brass ring, I didn't love a ton of the programming, but everyone else loved it. So I convinced myself, and there are only like a few instances in my life where this rings true. Usually it's like, if I don't like it, I don't watch it. But there are certain things like Absolutely Fabulous. I grew up on Britcoms. I grew up on Are You Being Served, all that stuff. Absolutely Fabulous did nothing for me, but it was like the show for a while. And the same with like a lot of these Nick shows where like any chance I got, I used to pet sit for my neighbors when they would go to the beach in the summer. So I like lived at their house until bedtime. Like I would go at like 6 in the morning to feed and walk the dog. And then I just stayed there to watch their cable. And so like, I also have full tapes of like, let's just let it run. And I'm from that era of like, not SNCC hadn't really taken, like, it's post Clarissa, kind of around Alex Mack, you know, but like, I missed Rugrats. And like, I've probably seen more Disney's Doug than Doug. But like, so that's kind of like, I didn't really get like entrenched until, like I said, like a decade ago. So.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, Nickelodeon was providing a lot of programming, but specifically this one is something we got to get into because it was a bright shining star. A lot of people remembered it and then suddenly it was gone. So we will get into that. We will explore it as we give everybody the
elevator pitch. So Salute Your Shorts was a short-lived but popular sitcom aimed at kids that aired on Nickelodeon for 2 seasons from 1991 to 1992. Then continuously ran in reruns for nearly a decade. The show was based on a 1986 book written by Steve Slavkin called Salute Your Shorts, Life at Summer Camp. A pilot was filmed in 1990, but Nickelodeon took an entire year before giving it the green light. Wait, wrong segment. As a result, the show had to be recast when it finally went into production, with only 3 cast members able to return for the 26-episode run of the series. Salute Your Shorts premiered on Nickelodeon July 4th, 1991, and aired its final episode on September 12th, 1992. Despite the fact that the show was the second highest rated cable television series for kids aged 6 to 11, Nickelodeon parent company Viacom reportedly did not want to spend money on raises for the cast, while requesting that the actors relocate to Florida to film in the new Nickelodeon studios at Universal Studios Florida. When an agreement could not be reached between cast, crew, and network, the show was canceled.
Now, as for what the show was about, many of you will hopefully recall that Salute Your Shorts dealt with the wacky adventures and relationships between kids sent to Camp Anawana for the summer, who were helped or harassed by a dim-witted camp counselor, Kevin Ugg Lee, played by Kirk Bailey. Now, veteran campers included the red-headed troublemaker Bobby Budnick, played by Danny Cooksey, his overweight, lisping sidekick Eddie Donkey Lips Gelfin, resident brainiac Sponge, played by Tim Ice, environmentalist hippie ZZ, played by Megan Berwick, sporty tomboy Telly Bradford, played by Venus DeMilo, and spoiled rich girl Dina, played by Heidi Lucas. Now, Eric MacArthur played Michael Stein, the first-year camper who was learning the culture of Camp Anawana, though in season 2, he was replaced by the scheming, fast-talking Ronnie Pinsky, played by Blake Soper, aka Blake Sennett. And the series also featured jokes that came over the outdoor loudspeaker from the droning camp director, Dr. Kong, who was voiced by the creator of the show, Steve Slavkin. Will, so curious, what was your first exposure to Salute Your Shorts?
In a hotel in Alabama, which is first exposure for a lot of folks. Giddy giddy. No, I was in Alabama. I think it was for a family reunion. And I remember this like distinctly. It was the summer of 1993. And I know that because the same weekend I discovered Salute Your Shorts was the weekend I discovered Saved by the Bell, the new class. So it was kind of like summer into fall. It was kind of like a compare and contrast thing because like Salute Your Shorts was completely new to me, even though like its run had finished officially by this point. But like Saved by the Bell, the new class was weird because it's like, okay, they're trying to keep this thing going. And if you've ever seen the first season of that, it's really just like new kids in old roles. Like they don't have distinct personalities. So I was kind of more fascinated by Salute Your Shorts. And this like rings true now. Like, I have always just kind of wanted to belong, like to a group or whatever. And I feel like that's what that first season is really all about. You know, everybody's like feeling each other out, but it's like, you got the new kid. He's got to like learn the ropes. He's got to learn the rules, learn about the awful waffle and all that stuff. And it's just kind of like, I always kind of relate to those where it's like the new kid in town, but like by the end of the season, they're all family kind of deal. So like, that's what was interesting to me. And at this point in time, I don't think I had gone to camp yet. So it was kind of like the same, like, even though I had had that experience from like outdoor education, actual like summer camp, going away for like extended time overnights, this was kind of like exciting the same way Saved by the Bell made high school look exciting. But like, we had a rude awakening in both situations, you know? So like, I remember like, right, because I actually, this is what a nerd I am, I took notes. I found them like recently. I took notes to like remember these characters' names and stuff. Cause not like we had Google. So it's not like I could say, hey, who played Telly? You know? So it was just kind of like, is her name really Venus de Milo? And things like that. So like, that is burned into my brain. But how about you? How did you discover Salute Your Shorts?
Oh yeah, that's fascinating. For me, it was definitely like, from its first run in all subsequent airings, whenever it was, because it was just playing in the afternoons, it was as ubiquitous as Saved by the Bell for me. In fact, I'm pretty sure that when Saved by the Bell was over, like my two episodes, you know, on WGN or whatever in the afternoon, then I would switch over to Salute Your Shorts and then probably switch back to Saved by the Bell on TBS, you know, because they were just like, it was just everywhere. But Salute Your Shorts for me, I always associate it specifically with the summers, because Nickelodeon would do this thing with this popsicle stick puppet named Stick Stickly. And he would run their afternoon programming block, and he would have a wheel of shows that he would spin. And I think kids could also call in on a request line. And so like Salute Your Shorts would come up all the time because it was summer themed. I'm sure some of it was rigged, you know, it's just like, we know it's popular, put it on. So that's like Stick Stickly is, as far as I'm concerned, a cast member of Salute Your Shorts. He was always introducing the next adventure. All right. Well, you know, it sounds like we both had enough exposure to Salute Your Shorts. We know what it's all about. You have your notes to refer to, but let's see how much we liked it. Let us check out our cheers. So I think we have to start where it starts, which is the theme song might be 50% of the appeal of the show, because it's right up there. It's with Animaniacs and Tiny Toons for like the most singable theme songs. You start singing that at a party, you know, people are going to join in with you, and it's got jokes. It's got a catchy melody. And most of all, the use of the word fart on TV, let alone a kid's show, that was absolutely shocking in the 90s. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. There was a lot of that, because I mean, like, there's the episode where like kids covered, is it Ugg? Somebody's covered in feathers and they say, go pluck yourself. And I'm like, even that like wordplay, you couldn't say bitch on TV back then.
Yeah.
You know, so like, this is Nickelodeon. So I'm like, even like, we know what you're doing. We know what you're saying.
It's so fun, like the way that they even lay it out. Because again, it could have just been clips from the show, right? And it's so not. It's an original recorded kind of skit of everybody sitting around singing, forgetting the lyrics, you know, correcting, you know, it makes me want to fart, you know, like all of that. Like it's so fantastic. And I love that for the second season, they re-recorded it. They're like, we have a new cast member. We're going to do it again. You know, that type of attention to detail meant a lot. Now, I will say for me, it is hard to pinpoint exactly what works about the show, because in my opinion, every aspect of production is just, it's in perfect harmony. Let's just start with the cast, like as an ensemble, because there was an original pilot, like we mentioned. You can find it on YouTube. I've watched it, and there is no way the show would have worked with that original cast of actors. They don't have it. And like we said, only Ugg and Budnick and Donkey Lips are the same actors that came back for the second pilot. And there's a reason for that, other than they say the other kids outgrew their roles, you know.
And you know, they swapped Budnick and Donkey Lips like their role, because in the original pilot, Donkey Lips is the bully and Budnick is the sidekick. But by the time they recorded the second pilot, Budnick had outgrown Donkey Lips. So they were just like, that gives him dominance.
He always had more attitude either way. Yeah. But yeah, but it's just like, it was a cast of generic, boring white kids. And not that this final version is super diverse, but it's even worse than the original. So you're just like, I can't really take this to heart. Like, I'm just, nobody's distinct. But I will say, just again, as an ensemble, the kid actors are so natural and real. Like, they're presented as archetypes. You know, these are semi-generic sitcom plots, but each performance is distinct. It has a real unique energy. Each of them really brings something. And again, if you watch the pilot, the same script does not work coming out of the mouths of anyone else. And they tweaked it when they redid it. But the timing and the chemistry of this cast is just fantastic. It's out of this world. I love it. What do you think?
I agree with that. I think a lot of it comes down to, I feel like the cast, they're not actors. Like, they're just natural kids that they cast in that role. And it's like, they didn't stick with it. You look up most of these people, it's like only a third of them stayed in show business. Two thirds of them don't even have Wikipedia pages, you know? And it's just one of those deals of like, it was almost like watching Ghost Rider. Those were not actors. Like, those kids were like, those were kids who did some acting after school. They weren't really in productions. It was that same, it's a little rough, but I like it. And I like how, like you're saying, it's not diverse, but I always appreciated that, like, you can tell that Telly wasn't written as a black girl, but Venus de Milo still kills it. It's kind of like the Lisa Turtle thing. And in doing that, it kind of like broadens your mind of what people are capable of. It doesn't like pigeonhole them, because it could have been easy to be like, oh yeah, Telly's here on scholarship because she's the smartest kid in the inner city. But like, they don't do that, you know? It's just kind of like, here's Telly, she's a tomboy and she's black, all right, got it, on to Donkey Lips, you know? It's that kind of thing. So like, it could have been more diverse. If it made it like five seasons, there would have been like Hector and Akira and all these, you know, like, it was the 90s. They would have gone there. But I enjoyed, it was kind of like, it was the same kind of experience as Swan's Crossing, going back to Remember That Show episode 2 for you newcomers, where I hadn't seen kids in that role before, where it's the kids' show. There are no adults. There's no, like, authority figure. There's Ugg, but we'll talk about that. But, like, ultimately, it's Lord of the Flies, you know? And the single cam thing makes it different, too. Because, again, Swan's Crossing at this point is the only other thing I've seen that is, like, single cam tween teen situations. So that's just kind of like what makes it stand out in my mind. It clearly made an impact because we all know of it and we all think about it. Like you said, the theme song does most of the heavy lifting, but when you find out there were only 26 episodes in an era of one season being 26, you know what I mean? Like, this is two seasons, 13 episodes apiece. Now, I know cable's slightly different, but that's still skimping. Like, that's a testament to how cheap Viacom was being at the time, because, like, it just doesn't, you would think that was like a five season, 100 episode show. It just never made it to syndication because of like contract disputes, you know?
Well, and it does, it speaks to the quality of the writing as well to say why 26 episodes could be rerun over and over again and people never got tired of it, because it does have an edge to it, like you were saying with some of those jokes that, you know, a little bit of language they're trying to skip in there. But like, the storylines I mentioned, you could look at them on their surface and say, well, these are like cartoon plots or generic sitcom plots, but they always add another layer to it. Like, for example, there's, you know, the classic authority figure and, you know, student who's a little, you know, troublemaker switching places. So Ugg and Budnick switch places as camper and counselor at one point. Dr. Khan's bratty niece shows up in an episode and they all have to show her a good time. And then she blackmails the group. The kids, you know, start a birdhouse building business together. But I feel like, unlike the Buddy Bands episode of Saved by the Bell, where Zach and the gang just learned that friendship is more important than money, Salute Your Shorts teaches kids about disputes between management, labor, how unions are formed, how capital is raised to fund a business. And it's very funny. But actually, now that I think about it, I guess Saved by the Bell does have the same thing. because Lisa leads a strike, right? Like, she gets overworked in the fashion club or whatever. So, you know, but there is no music video on Salute Your Shorts. There's no buddy bands, you know, anything going on there. But I still felt like their writing was more sophisticated. Even just, they did so many genre homages over just two seasons, especially, I think one of the most famous is the horror, you know, with Zeke the Plumber, which is just like, wow, like, it's actually pretty freaky, just the design they came up with. Like, he could be right up there with Freddy Krueger, or they kind of have suspense and adventure, the Treasure of Sierra Madre, not Sierra Madre, but they use that, you know, or they did like a Capture the Flag episode that's kind of like war movies, you know, like, so they really had a lot of this. Is there a particular episode that has always stood out to you that's a favorite?
Honestly, no. Like, this is gonna sound like such a cop out, but it's really just the pilot, because like, I like learning who every, like, who all the characters are. Like, to me, this is so dumb, but like, the biggest takeaway from like being introduced to that show, I'm like, wait a minute, is that Sam from Different Strokes? Because like, I hadn't seen Terminator 2 yet, and it's like, I didn't know Danny Cooksey was still acting. But like, you gotta understand that period of Different Strokes where Sam comes along, a lot of people have written it off because like, that's that point in every sitcom of that era where like, okay, add a cute kid because the cute kid got too old. But like, Dixie Carter is his mom, and they go to like Universal Studios and they meet Kit and Michael Knight. Like, Sam on Different Strokes is like my favorite character at a certain point. So to see him pop up, but he's this like rough around the edges bully, that was kind of like jarring to me, you know? So it was really just like that pilot, but I was fixated on Danny Cooksey.
Yeah, like, it, because he came in with a career, and then like at that time, I remember when I learned that Budnick was the voice of Montana Max on Tiny Toon Adventures. And I was like, what? Like, he was doing that as well. And then, yeah, of course, I managed to trick my mom into taking me to see T2 in theaters. So I got to see him there as well. But it's one of those situations where the Budnick character, really, he's the Fonzie. He's the one that everybody remembers. He stands out, but he also gets so much character development, and really all the characters do in one way or another. And I think that's another nice detail that they decided to go with. I guess what I would say is there's not continuity where like it's all one storyline, but there's continuity throughout the season. So for example, initially, like you were saying, Budnick and Donkeylips, they're kind of seen as a pair of bullies in the pilot. But like, Donkeylips actually gets paired eventually with Sponge. They become kind of a comedic duo. They're like out outsiders of either extreme of body types, but like, there's an episode where they want to enter a wrestling tournament, you know, and Sponge is underweight and Donkeylips is overweight, and so they're working out and like eating and all these different things that's going on. And then they become this group that kind of, they're on the outside and they are observing, like when there's romantic episodes and things happening, and they have their commentary going on. Or like, even a great example with Budnick is Michael and Budnick, they're adversaries at the start, right? Budnick is always picking on him and they're the new kid, whatever. But then they at one point both fake sick so they don't have to go on this field trip they don't want to go to, and they get locked in the camp infirmary together. And through that, they become best friends. And then as the rest of the season progresses, they become better and better friends. But then when season two starts, then Michael doesn't come back, and Budnick has a whole like crisis and he's upset. Pinsky comes in, he's like, who are you? You're not Michael. Da, da, da. So like, they really did work with everything and make you care about the characters, but still gave you self-contained great episodes along the way, which I thought was fantastic. But who is your favorite character then? Just Budnick? Or was there another character you related to?
Honestly, my favorite is probably Michael, because even though it's an ensemble show, he's like the new kid, and it's kind of like through his eyes, like he's not really the insert, but like, he's leading us through everything. So like, I appreciate him most. I don't like Budnick. I like Danny Cooksey. You know, like, I don't like Budnick. I don't like Donkeylips because he hails from that era of like, nobody ever gives themselves a nickname. Nicknames are bestowed upon you. So it's like, we just looked at like the things people were like most insecure about. I was like, that's it. You know, so it's like, I feel bad for Donkeylips. I don't know, we'll get into jeers, but like, my favorite is Michael. So by season two, I'm just kind of like, I don't know who I'm supposed to root for at this point, because I don't really like Penske. You know, like,
Interesting. Okay. All right. But yeah, when we get into Jeers, I think we're going to continue this conversation. I will say that as a burgeoning fat kid at this time, I related to Donkey Lips, and I felt like they did have nuance to his character where, yes, there would be references to his weight, but I didn't think it wasn't like where Screech got like the butt of every joke on Saved by the Bell. On Salute Your Shorts, he was allowed to win every once in a while. He was allowed to be shown as like a sensitive kid who was always optimistic and always nice, you know, like, and he was smart enough. Like the birdhouse building episode I was telling you about, he's the leader of the union. He's the one who comes up with the whole production line. Like, you see, oh, Donkey Lips is actually capable of some pretty cool stuff. So I appreciated that they went that route instead of where they could have gone, you know, somebody like Horace from the Monster Squad, where they literally just call him Fat Kid all the time.
Like, society wise we're ramping up to that in this era, because I feel like it peaks with the movie Heavyweights. Yeah. And then we realize, like, okay, we gotta back it up a bit. And like, no one ever talks about that movie. No one who was involved in it, like Keenan, ever talks about that movie. But that was where American society was like, okay, we're making fun of these fat kids. We gotta dial it down a bit, you know? So.
All right. Well, it seems like we have managed to explore what makes this show special, what is awesome about it. But it was the 90s, and therefore it means there must be some Jeers.
Boo!
What do you got there, Will?
Oh, so many, so many. This is probably like a first since we've been doing this show. And like, it was a show I was really excited to cover and really wished I enjoyed it more when revisiting it. It's so boring. It's so boring to me. I guess I'm too used to like flashy teen neon. So everything's like drab and flat. Like, the setting doesn't help things. It's camp. First off, I need a laugh track. Like, kids are smart, but kids are dumb. And I like the social conditioning of a laugh track. Sometimes you do need to be told when to laugh. There's certain beats in this show that I thought would have been amplified with a studio audience, but since this is not technically like whatever live, then it would have been the canned laughter, whatever. I needed that. Secondly, I don't like single cam. Even though I said that like that makes it stand out to me, it's not a great thing. For that era, I want a multi-cam situation. And then following up with that, I don't love the characters. I like how they're acted, but everyone is just kind of like bland to me. It's like, everyone knows what role they're supposed to fulfill, and they're probably doing the best they can with what they've got, but it's one of those, like, did they really get the best person for the job? It's like Dina. She's the hot rich girl. Is she that hot? like Zizi, she is the like environmentalist crunchy girl. Is she that crunchy? Like, she's no Jesse Spano. I don't feel anybody maximized their role. They are all in like the middle of what they're supposed to be. And it's adequate. It gets the job done. But I felt this could have been a more dynamic show. But the like main unforgivable sin that it commits, in my mind, this show introduced the Nickelodeon mainstay of the man-child, where we already had these shows where, like, adults are morons. You know, the parents don't know anything, the principals don't know anything, the teachers are goofy. But here we have Ugg, who's not quite a kid and not quite an adult. He's the authority figure, but he's just as messed up as the kids. Now, there's some lesson there of, like, hey, everybody's trying to make it and figure things out. But, like, I hate how, like, adults are a joke here. This is gonna sound so, like, old man of me, but I feel like that conditioned us. Like, when you look at, like, all those characters in shows as we were growing up, it's just kind of like, oh, adults are dumb. They don't know what they're talking about. And we grew up and we realized adults are dumb, and a lot of us don't know what we're talking about. But I really hate that, like, in-between character. Like, a good parallel is Jerry Traynor. Jerry Traynor plays Spencer on iCarly. He has been Spencer Shay for like 15 years at this point. But prior to that, he had similar characters on other Dan Schneider Nickelodeon shows. And I just feel it's like this mascot of the network. And I don't like, this is so like the terror in the toy box or whatever of me. I just think it was damaging to the youth for that character to exist.
I am so diametrically opposed to everything you said. Like, complete counterpoint to me, which is I love the single camera because everything is staged and choreographed, and I love just like the whole idea of like the theatricality of it. It's like, oh, this person passes by the camera here, then this person walks up here. Like, everything just seems so wonderfully crafted, and I love that part of it, that they were coming up with bits, obviously, like while they were creating the show. I think every character really does pop in a great way for me. The only, you know, complaint I ever had as a kid was that Michael was boring. And you're connected with him, and he was so boring because he was stiff. He lacked charisma. Now, the actor, this was his first thing ever. Most of these kids, it was their first thing. But like, he was like literally not an actor. And then he got pulled into the show and they wanted him. So, and again, the original kid, it could have been a lot worse. He's a little nebbishy. Michael is kind of a whiner. Like, he plays an interesting role, but everything about him is just like, oh no.
But he's not a star. And that's what I like. That's my problem with like Zach Morris, where like, he's aspirational. All the guys want to be him. All the girls want to be with him. But who's going to relate to that? I related to Michael because he was like, even though he's like, he's supposed to be the main character, he's not. And he's just trying to find his place with these people. And he was more relatable being kind of whiny and normal and not really dynamic and not being Ferris Bueller, Parker Lewis, like that kind of deal. I didn't want him slick. I feel the show's rough. And sometimes I like it rough around the edges. And sometimes it weighs on me.
Oh, see, because to me, it's like, if I'm watching a show, I want a character to be to the extreme, you know? I want Sponge to be the egghead. I want Dina to be spoiled, and I did have a crush on her, so it worked for some of us.
We all did, but I mean, looking, like, I don't know, it was the times, you know? We all did, but looking back at it, I didn't think they maxed out being the smart guy or the spoiled girl or the sporty. I don't know.
But I have to ask, because like I said, for me, when Michael didn't come back for season two, I was like, thank you, Pinsky. Like, I love this kid. He is so quick. He is so fun. And he created a lot more story possibilities. Plus, he always talked about, you know, the Pinsky family salami or whatever. Like, there was always this history about the Pinsky name. But there's like one joke in particular that always cracked me up, which is, so they all send letters to their family saying, hey, order some of our birdhouses from us and all this stuff, right? He's like, mine got returned. No forwarding address. Should I be concerned with this? You know, just like, there's some great stuff going on with Pinsky. And obviously, he was the one, I mean, he goes on, he's on Boy Meets World. Now he's been in a band for all these years, you know, that he's a big deal with Jenny Lewis. So it's just, he obviously had something going for him. And I remember seeing it back then, which is fun. But also, the man child, I understand, like, that our kids may not respect us and that has been passed forward throughout all television. But I think, like, he does such a great job, the UGG actor, Kirk Bailey. Yes, he's kind of a jerk sometimes. Yes, he's kind of stupid sometimes. But then you also do feel for him when he gets stood up. Like, certain things happen where he'll be, like, hitting on a girl at a burger stand that works there. And then she takes advantage of him, takes all his money, and then, like, closes the window. Or, you know, when he's breaking up with Mona, his girlfriend, or when he gets a Dear John letter from his, like, all these things. Like, I always felt bad for UGG, like, even though he was harassing everybody.
I've disappointed you greatly.
No, I love hearing your perspective on this. But if those are the problems, then if these are the things that were not working for you, I'd be so curious to find out how you would fix it. So I say, let's get on over to the camp nurse and maybe we can offer our services as the show doctors. All right, what do you got, Will? How do you fix it?
This one's interesting because, like, I don't fix it. I think the perfect Salute Your Shorts has already been made. And it's a little known fact that Disney Channel has been playing catch up to Nickelodeon for like 20 years at this point, and every time Nick has a hit, Disney comes up with their spin on it. Well, it took them like 20 years to do it, 30 in this case, but I am a big fan of the show Bunked. Bunked is a spinoff of the sitcom Jesse. Jesse starred Debbie Ryan as like this 19-20-something army brat who moves to New York City with like aspirations to be an actress. But until she can get like a major role, she becomes the nanny to these like rich kids. Like, so she like lives in their penthouse and all that kind of stuff, and hilarity ensues. That show lasts for like 5 seasons, and Disney wanted to keep the magic going. So the spinoff of Jesse is Bunked, in that it turns out the rich kid's parents bought this summer camp, and the kids go to work there in the summers. Basically, you're already comfortable with the characters, but now you're kind of seeing them like fish out of water, dealing with like rustic stuff, that kind of deal. And now they're like the counselors, and they've got their campers with their personalities going on, that kind of deal. That lasts for like 3-ish seasons, to the point where like the Jesse kids, they're phased out. So then by that point, you have introduced newer characters. And so there is the main character played by Miranda May. She kind of is like in the whole show as like a junior counselor, then a counselor, and then she takes over the camp because like the rich kids are like, we got to go back to being rich, and you know what you're doing, run this camp. So then you get like 2 seasons of her like running the camp, and it's perfect to me because it's everything I said I wanted. It is Salute Your Shorts that's multicam with a laugh track. It's bright and colorful. The kids all have a distinct personality. But then to kick it up a notch, there's this little known thing. Let's get behind the scenes of TV. That if you change the name of a show, it counts as a new show in terms of contract negotiations and crew contracts and unions and all of that. So at some point, Bunked becomes Bunked Learning the Ropes, and they decide that, hey, Lou, that's Miranda May's character, she's gonna buy a dude ranch in Montana. So now she has the summer camp going, but she also has her own Hey Dude going with those kids with their own distinct personalities. And as you can see, I'm a huge fan of this universe. I discovered Jesse during COVID, and like, cause it was on every night for like 2 hours. So I've watched it several times, and I've watched most of Bunked. And every time I watch Bunked, I think of Salute Your Shorts, because it's clear that was like the blueprint for it, but it does everything right that I want that Salute Your Shorts didn't do. It is maybe the difference of like, keep in mind, I loved Salute Your Shorts when I was like younger in that age, but I think a lot of it with like a lot of what played into it was like, this is on Nickelodeon, it has to be good. This is the thing you've always wanted. It's like, if you don't like it, there's something wrong with you, because this is a popular thing. But now that I'm older, I'm just kind of like, might have been popular, but it wasn't for me. But Bunked is perfect. So I'd either turn this into Bunked, or I just say we're good because Bunked exists. Everybody go watch Bunked on Disney Channel.
Well, it's so funny you said that, because I've only seen Jesse in hotel TV watching with when my kids are flipping through and we find the Disney Channel. Like, oh, Jesse, it's like Charles in Charge. Okay. And then I only learned about Bunked Learning the Ropes because while we did our Learning the Ropes episode and I'm researching, that's what keeps coming up in Google searches.
Yep, so, sure is.
But I am on the same track as you, because yes, I would have loved at the time for the show to get 2 more seasons, but I don't think it would have worked with this cast, because they were already too old by the end of season 2 to be believable as kids who would be sent away to camp. I mean, they were teenagers. Danny Cooksey was in a heavy metal band at this time, you know, that he's trying to make happen. Like, he wouldn't even have wanted to be there. But I also don't think bringing in a new cast of campers, these new characters, would have worked either, because the chemistry
chemistry between this group was so strong. Now, I know you brought it up earlier, Saved by the Bell, the new class, somehow lasted longer than the original series, but I've never understood that, because other than network stubbornness, that show was garbage as far as I'm concerned.
No, it did what you're actually saying this should have done, in that, like, it wove in new characters, but progressively. You didn't have, like, okay, these kids have done their 4 years, time for another new... There were kids who would, like, start and disappear, but then new kids would join the class, and then old kids would disappear, then the new kids' personalities would swap. Like, they did a lot of magic to keep that going. So even with Salute Your Shorts, in season two, they should have introduced, like, maybe two new campers, and then, like, season three, more focus on them while you let maybe, like, Budnick go. Like, Donkey Lips has to stay, but Budnick go. So if you do it like a tapestry, that's how you stretch it out.
Maybe so. And now this is my pitch for a third season. If everybody could come to an agreement, you jump the shark, but in like a wacky way that's of the time. I want the campers to be recruited by the government to be counselors at a new camp in a foreign country like Russia. They are brought there to improve international relations. Ugg and his girlfriend Mona are made the camp directors. It would be like the Malibu Sands episodes of Saved by the Bell. It would be like a 6-episode run, okay, and where they're in Russia teaching Russians how to be American campers. You know, you have the culture shock, and you've been to Russia, so I know you would be on board for this. Now, that would lead to a season, though, where the camp across the lake, they're looking to buy out Dr. Khan, and he's considering it because enrollment is down, that the kids somehow caused a scandal, maybe was international with the Russia thing or whatever. They were sort of involved, so they feel like they need to stay on board and help out. And the only way to save the camp, though, is they have to recruit campers from around the country to go to Camp Anawana. So you now have a travel season, and they're using the Mighty Ducks 2 formula, right? So we meet a bunch of new characters in fun locations. Maybe one or two of the most charismatic would join the cast permanently. You know, but it's just like I would sort of be okay with going like that way and bringing in the new generation, but yeah, I think it has to be so ridiculous that you jump on board or you don't. But
season three, I feel like, still has to be grounded. Season four, you can go to Russia. I do like the whole camp across the lake, because there's always a camp across the lake, and like maybe like a merger, because again, going back to that thing I love and the thing you hate, Saved by the Bell, the new class, one of the key things they did around season three to really like explain where these kids are coming from, they shut down Valley. So those kids had to go somewhere. So then you had like a season of friction, because they were still like Valley born and bred, forced to go to Bayside. So it was like the kids from the other side of the tracks. And then eventually they get over that and they're all friends. And then you can go to Russia. You know, I need Russia in season four.
That is fine. I think that there is some things that you could add to the mix to make it interesting. But yeah, if we wanted to turn it into a franchise, you're right. You do have to have the new blood. Although, like, I could almost see, like, you eventually by season five, you take it out of the camp setting. Those kids are now young adults in college, and they're making their way in the city. And now, you know, it's ZZ, you know, working for an environmental group, you know, and you have Telly gets into the WNBA. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just kind of do all these things where now you're having those adventures in the urban setting.
I was thinking about something, though, before we get to the urban setting. It may be before we get to Russia, because this actually sets up Russia. You have to stick with the theme of the show and the title, Salute Your Shorts. Salute. What if we make this a military camp? You know, just like one summer they come back, like that's our pivot. Like season three, they come back and suddenly like Dr. Khan sold it to the military. And now it's like a cadet training camp, which is prepping them to go to Russia.
Loving it. I'm loving it. Man, this is great. The hazing that would take place in the military camp. Yes. The awful waffle. We'd finally see it happen, you know, like
right
understand. Well, this has been fun. Well, it's definitely, you know, Camp Anawana, maybe we don't Anawana see it anymore in your case, but I also wonder, I've been thinking about that, because see, I bought a bootleg DVD set years ago, so I've been watching it all this time, even when it wasn't available. You know, it's been on Amazon, it's on Paramount Plus, but only a few select episodes. It's not
every- that's where I was watching. I was like, I pay for this thing, I gotta use it for something.
Yeah. So I, you know, I stayed familiar with it all those years, so I can understand like having a break and then coming back to it. You're kind of like, yeah, it doesn't quite pop as much when I've seen what's possible. But we are also going to now explore something that hasn't been around for a while. We are leaving the familiar territory of sitcoms to explore the wild world of 90s sketch comedy as we talk about the rise and fall of Mad TV. I know you love Saturday Night Live and sketch comedy. I have a very special place in my heart for this show and all the 90s sketch comedy, the state and everything else. So we are going to have a very fun discussion. This had a life. It ran for a while, but it was always hidden. It always felt like you got lucky if you found Mad TV. It wasn't appointment television for everybody. So we'll have a lot to discuss and get into next time around. So please stay tuned and make sure that you're following me. Hey, at Hoju Coolander on social media to get the updates. Will, where can they find you?
You can find me at my website, westweekever.com. Everything's there. You can find me on social media at William B. West.
Yes, indeed. And we should say Mad TV, the sketches are on YouTube. You can find it. If you need a refresher, go on out and just search Mad TV sketches. You'll find all your favorite characters and we will dissect and discuss next time around. But until next time, we're changing the channel.
This has been a presentation of Geekster Media.